I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Issam Jamil. He is the author of Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, a Civilian WikiLeaks. Now, right now, there's a big buzz around WikiLeaks, and it seems really appropriate for us to delve a little bit more into a life of a man who actually lived in Iraq, and after a 12-year exile, returned. He writes about what he experienced going back, and today we're actually going to touch on a few of those experiences. You know, it's really some of those things that many of us living in countries where freedom is norm, and, you know, we don't even entertain the thought of having, not even having freedom, 24/7. At least I can't, and I can't even fathom what it would be like to be on that alert at all times. But first, a little bit about Issam. Issam Jamil was born in Baghdad in 1954. After finishing high school, he enrolled in the Academy of Fine Arts at Baghdad University and eventually did his postgraduate work in theatrical study. Issam studied acting, but was more interested in writing, and he began to write criticism and reviews about local plays that were being performed in Baghdad theaters. His job inspired him to become a playwright, and many of his plays were performed by the National Theater of Baghdad. After departing Iraq in 1994, he worked in the radio station belonging to one of the Iraqi opposition groups against Saddam Hussein. In 2002, he immigrated to Australia, where he currently lives. Hi, Issam.
Hi, how are you?
Good. I'm so glad to be talking to you. And you're all the way from Australia, and here we are in Texas. So this is a real pleasure, and I'm glad we were able to find a time that works for both of us.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Well, this is a very interesting book, Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, and
yes.
A Civilian WikiLeaks. All right. Well, I want to have you just tell our listening audience just briefly what your book is about, and then we're going to talk about some of your experiences.
Really, my book is talking about my experience when I traveled back to Iraq to visit Iraq a couple of years ago. I'm very excited to think to the things I have seen there. So I decided to record all the details. I decided to record the change, how much change happened in Iraq society. I left Iraq in 1993, so there's a lot of things have changed during this period. I was trying first to describe what are these changes.
I understand that you were away from Iraq for about 12 years and you were in exile.
Yes.
So yes. Tell me why you chose to leave in the first place.
In 1993, freedom was very narrow.
Uh-huh.
There is a lot of persecution. As a playwright, I wrote many, many plays, and I direct some of these plays by myself to the National Theater. Some people advised me that I will be interrogated by Saddam's regime,
mm-hmm.
and he advised me if I can leave this country before trouble comes to me. So I decided to leave anyway and to go to Jordan. It was the first country I think about. It was adjacent, and they facilitate a lot of things to Iraqi refugees. So I moved and stayed there for about 8 years in Jordan.
Uh-huh.
Yes. In Jordan, I'm involved in some activity, political activity, you can say, working with a radio belonged to the opposition
uh-huh.
in Iraq. And I was actually threatened many times by Iraqi regime members,
uh-huh.
but I think God saved me all the time. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about your faith a little later, but I want to talk, you just mentioned that you were threatened by the Iraqi regime, and so what type of threats did you get?
We used to receive some calls, threatening calls. So I've changed my accommodation many times. Every 3 or 4 months, we change our accommodation. I was very cautious when I went up walking on the street. We have many friends in the radio station. They got some letters, and they received some people with Saddam Hussein's regime shot some photos for them in different places just to tell them, we know everything about you. You understand? I just received a phone call. And that's enough, I think, to make me change my living every time.
Wow, that's a lot of moving around, and you did this for 8 years.
Yeah, 8 years.
Wow.
Before moving to Australia.
So why did you choose Australia?
Actually, I didn't choose it.
Oh.
For Iraqi refugee, we are not able to choose anything. We just want to get out. At first, they put me in a list to make interview with a Canadian committee. Yeah, but this committee, something happened, and they didn't come to the UNHSC, the headquarters in Jordan. So they referred me to Australia, and I said, okay. Some people I know, they refer them to United States, and they are now living in the United States. Yeah.
When you went back now, you went back to Iraq after being away for 12 years. Did you have a lot of fear going back to Iraq for your nephew's funeral?
Yeah, a lot of fears. I described in my book the first night I spent in Iraq. It was horrible. I call it horrible. I don't know. The publisher changed the title. He said, let's put something instead. I reached the border about 2 a.m. And we had to stay in just like a petrol station or a gas station. There, well, all the drivers just stay until the lights because the road wasn't safe. A lot of people just crossed the road with guns and kill people and steal their money. So it was very horrible to stay in this place. And there's something happened. I wrote it. There's something wrong in the border. One of the Iraqi or someone just crossed the border illegally, and the American soldier surrounded the area and just make a very huge search for us, for our ID. It was very hard to explain how hard this night to me.
You know, we can only imagine. I can only imagine because I have never experienced something like that. But just trying to, in my mind and my feelings of imagining what it would be like for that you be there. Now, I'm assuming you were by that time a Australian citizen. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So then, this is why you were able to go back, and because you were no longer an Iraqi resident or a citizen. Okay. When you went back into the area where you used to live, what was different from when you left 12 years before that?
The most thing I noticed, the people in Iraq, they are very, they have a lot of zeal and obsession about religious things.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah, I left Iraq, my family, whole my family, no one was involved in religion, no one know how to pray as a Muslim. But I returned back to see all my brothers were praying, actually, my mom, my nephew, everyone. And the small house, they changed just like a mosque. There was an imam. I mean, imam, it means the leader for the person when they pray as a group. It's something happened. Everywhere I go, all my friends, they're talking about religion. The most interesting thing is the religion. I can't find a secure life, you know?
Oh, do you think that they turned to their faith, to their religion, because they had so much fear? To take them away from that fear, then they were able to change more into the religious realm.
Yeah, but not the fear.
No.
The hard living, I can say.
Uh-huh.
The hard living. You know, the Iraqi people suffered a lot. They involved in a war with Iran for 10 years. Yeah. After that, you know what's happened to Iraq when Saddam invaded Kuwait. And after that, the American troops invade Iraq in 2003. You know, before also about 13 years, Iraq was under economic sanctions. It was put from United Nations as a punishment. Everything, all these things affect the people. They become, they always expect the hope or the open door will come from heaven, not from earth. That's why.
So when you went back there, and you know, you mentioned the difference that the people seem to be more religious. Was there, did you notice any struggles that they were having that you didn't notice when you lived there 12 years prior?
Oh, what do you mean?
Like, they were, you know, were they struggling to sustain themselves with food and water? Did that change?
Yeah, a lot, yeah. You see, the first thing, in Saddam Hussein regime, the people, they got a coupon from every month. They got the essential food in very, very low prices. If you can compare it, let's say 50 cents for sugar and rice and flour, something like that. Now everything has been stopped. You see, the government says we can't provide you all these things as like before. I'm sorry, because the government undergo very hard problems. The economy is not going well, so the Iraqi people had to look for something, not the coupons. Mm-hmm. Besides, there's no jobs. The job's very narrow door to find a job, because there's no security, there's no company, working companies. That's why living is very hard.
Yeah.
And that's why, that explains why the crime has been increasing. Some people want to get living, but they don't have any chance, so they kill. Somebody, some gangs give them some money, or even the terrorists, they give them some money. It's everything. I just forgot to tell you something about the fear. Yeah, it's something inside, because I am not Iraqi, that's make me much fear. If something happened and still available in Iraq, some people steal people and buy to the terrorists, you know this fact or not? I mean, it's still the foreign people. It's not the Iraqi people.
Yes, yes.
Anyone has a foreign password, they said it's worth thousands of dollars, and they sell it to the terrorist. And the terrorist going to kill him. They said he's not faithful to his country, something like that. So everything is fear, the air, everything. I can't explain it. It's a hell, really a hell.
I bet it, you know, from what I'm hearing you saying, yes, it would be, and it's to live in that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for years and years and years. That beats down on that human soul so badly. It's hard for me to even imagine. I'm in the United States, you're in Australia, we have freedom.
Yes,
we don't have to have those fears at all. And we just don't even entertain the thought of being afraid of having a passport stolen or walking down the street and being killed. It's so hard to even imagine. And so, you still have a lot. Do you have a lot of family in Iraq?
Yeah, actually, most of my family, my mother, my sister still there. My sister, she left Iraq to Egypt, and they returned back. My younger brother also there. Uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of my cousins also. They are still there, but they moved from Iraq. Most of them to Nineveh. Nineveh is in the north of Iraq.
Uh-huh.
It's called Mosul. It's an ancient city. You remember the story of text in the Bible of the of fish, the big fish,
yes.
And God, it's there in the north of Iraq. Yeah, they think it's safe than Baghdad. Baghdad is the most unsafe place in Iraq.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Assam Jamil, author of Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, a Civilian Week Leaks. And as you have heard so far, it's been a very, very interesting conversation. Stay tuned, because we're going to be delving a little bit more into the life of Assam and even touch on his conversion from a Muslim upbringing to Christianity. His website is IraqThroughABulletHole.com. They're still there. Do they have any visions or thoughts of leaving?
Of leaving, they used to leave. I said my sister left to Egypt. I returned back. It's not easy to go outside Iraq, especially many or hundreds and thousands of Iraqis now in Syria, in Jordan, surrounded in the country surround Iraq. It's not easy to live there. Also, I used to live in Jordan. I saw how much it's difficult, the life, because this country is not very strong economic, and they had a lot of hardship for their own people. So, and they can't provide jobs for strangers. That's why people had to stay in Iraq. They said also, all the time I called them, they said, okay, we are going to stay there. If we die, we're going to be buried there, mm-hmm. and this is our land. That's what they said.
Wow. So I'm very curious in knowing Assam. You've written this book. Now, you know, you were on the hit list and being threatened when you lived in Jordan. And now that you're away and you're in Australia, it's a safe place. However, there are people all over the place. And I am wondering if you have any bottom line fear that, you know, you've written this book and exposed some things in your experiences. Do you have any fear at all that maybe they're going to come and get you?
No. Not at all. I didn't attack some people personally. Actually, I didn't. Despite I wrote about the new government, the current government actually criticized them for some points, but it's not the. Fear from somebody attack me. I don't think so.
Well, it's good. I'm glad to hear that because I wondered, you know, if you were threatened in Jordan, what it would be like, if, you know, in Australia, being that you've written this book. Now, I understand that you were a Muslim, of course, living in Iraq, and that you converted to Christianity.
Yeah.
And I'd like to talk about that. And so this is a radical change, a very radical change. And so tell me why this happened.
Well, first of all, I wasn't a Muslim. I just a name.
Okay.
Yeah, I never believe in Muslim practices. I respect everyone has his creed, everyone has notion, but I never. I was an atheist before. But I try. I tell the truth. I try to be to believe in God. In Jordan, something happened to me. You know, sometimes when we're living in an easy living, everything available, you can't feel the voice of God.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything available to you. You just pick a phone or you pay your bill, you go to the bank, you see? But when you live, when you're facing or encountering some hardship, you think about these things. Something happened to me. It's very interesting to tell. It's not very. It's a very short story. I was broken. I don't have any money in my pocket, and I have only about 10 cents, something like that, to return back to my home. I was very depressed. Yeah, and I found on the ground a watch, a woman watch. It's very brand new. Yeah, there was many people who sell in Jordan. You see, this is the Oriental life. Many people sell things on the street. Yeah, the watch was in front of them, but nobody saw. I pick up the watch. It can be a fortune for me, about even it's worth $10. But I couldn't take it. I couldn't put it in my pocket. Always. Sound in my soul said it's not yours. So I said, I talked to everybody. Everybody know who this watch, who belongs. And somebody said, yes, there was a seller here, and he left. It might be, miss this watch. And I give the watch to this person. And he said, "I'm going to give it to hand to the seller." Yeah. After this happened, I walked about 10 meters, not more, 10 meters, and there was a Jordanian dinar. You know, a dinar is just like a dollar. Yeah, it's flying in the air and comes to under my feet immediately. Something. Well, I say, what thing? I pick up this dinner. It was a fortune for me, but I felt that there's something says, why you deny me? I am here.
Wow.
And from this experience, I began to search for God. I used the Jordanian library, the public library. But you know, for a person who came from Islamic background, the first thing to think is to go to the Islamic books.
Yeah.
So I began to read these Islamic books, but nothing happened to me. I didn't feel much impressed. Yeah. But after that, when some friends called me to go to church, I went to church. I liked this environment. And then it's a long story. I wrote short things about this story in my book also. Yeah, I don't want to be long for you.
Well, that's a beautiful story, Issam. And it sounds like you had a spiritual awakening. And obviously, this is still in Jordan. And, you know, it seems like everything else just flowed after that because it was right. And it sounds like your connection with God, with your religion, with your spirituality, took you to where you are.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. So I'm very curious. I mean, you went back to Iraq and all of a sudden you found all your friends and family were very religious and, of course, Muslim. And here you are, a Christian, a converted, you know, converted to Christianity, going back. Now,
yeah.
Did that sort of cause a bit of a ruffle?
Yeah.
I'm putting it mildly.
Yeah, because I am the older son of my family, that makes things so different. so they can't criticize me. They are very cautious when they talk to me about these things. I'm involved in many discussions and debates with my brother about Islam and Christianity. But I think this debate is not useless. It is useless because the creed, the religious creed or notions, it's not something logical. You understand?
Yeah.
It's something spiritual.
Yes.
Yeah. You believe in God as something. It's not material. You can't see. Always something about another world. So I try to defend all the time he attacked the Christianity, because actually the Quran has a lot of verses attack the Christianity.
Yeah.
And they are, and the Muslims believe they are infidel people. They are believe in the three gods. I try to explain that these things is not true. We are not believing in three gods. We believe in one God. But you know, it wasn't easy to let them accept me as I am. That's what I want to say.
It wasn't. But on the other hand, you had no problem accepting them from your Christian base that they were Muslim. They're still your family and your brother.
Yes, it is part of the Christian teaching, and that's what I love Christianity.
Yes.
Jesus Christ didn't teach the people, don't touch the people who don't believe in God, or don't be close to the Muslims, something like that. He always break these bridges with people. He always talk to the people with the sinner people, you know.
Yeah.
The Islam is just like a Jewish. Yeah, the Muslim can't eat with, food from people not our Muslims.
Right.
If somebody is not a Muslim, he is not immaculate. That's right.
Yeah.
Immaculate. Yeah. For that reason, I accept them, but I'm not sure if they accept me or not.
Yeah. And you know, does it really matter? Because as long as you're true to your own faith, that's all that matters, isn't it? So do you feel that now, going back to Iraq as a Christian and seeing what was going on, do you find that there is a lot of antagonism against the Christians in Iraq?
Yes, a lot, especially after invading Iraq. People believe that the United States come to change the Islam. That's what they thought. I tried to explain this thing. I made a debate with my brother. I told him that, why you believe that America wants to change the Islam? There are many Muslim soldiers in U.S. force in Iraq. They are Muslim, still Muslim. So why do you think United States, secure country, they don't put the religion as a goal for its purpose? We must change the people in Iraq living in the past. You know, this old country is still living that the religion is the first. They must put the religion, if you said this Iraq an Islamic country, they can't accept Iraq to be a secular country. That's what I mean.
Well, gosh, this has been just such an interesting conversation. We've gone into all kinds of topics, and I know that our listeners are just glued on to this interview, because you are a very interesting man, and it's great to hear you speaking that, you know, after leaving Iraq and going to Jordan, having been threatened, and then going to Australia and having the freedom to live who you are, and not being threatened and just being able to do whatever you want to do, and even to the fact that you were able to, in your mind and in your wholeness, to change to Christianity from a Muslim base, even though you said you weren't a practicing Muslim, it was still that base. I mean, this is an incredible journey that you have had in this lifetime.
Yes, indeed,
is right. And I just really, really thank you for being here and allowing us to find out more about you. And, gosh, listeners, Issam's book is Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, a Civilian WikiLeaks. Now, isn't that appropriate? And his website address is iraqthroughabullethole.com. And through is spelled T-H-R-U. So it's Iraq, T-H-R-U, bullethole.com. Again, Issam, thank you so much for allowing me to talk to you. This has been a real pleasure and an honor for me.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm very pleased to this interview. You are a very nice person. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Issam. And there you go, listeners. As I said, Issam Jamil, author of Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, Civilian WikiLeaks. Check this book out. I mean, it's fascinating. And what we heard today, you're going to find out even more about his experience. Check it out. I really encourage you to do so. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.